If LeBron is healthy, I see no reason why this kid can't play at a very high level until he's 38, 39. And he hasn't had really a drop-off yet. He's aged very well. I think he can maintain this for another 4 to 5 years.
Rick Bucher.
Kareem played until 38. Kareem didn't lose some of his athleticism, but the clock for him didn't start at 18. He went through college. So I don't see any way, as amazing as LeBron has been physically, that he's going to play to age 38.
This is the BJ Armstrong and Rick Bucher Show, starring BJ and Bucher.
Welcome to the latest edition of the BJ and Bucher podcast. I am Rick Bucher. He is BJ Armstrong. BJ, I don't even have to ask how you're doing this morning. I know you are doing terrific. What has you in such a good mood, if I may ask?
Well, my Iowa Hawkeyes
defeated
Michigan, and I'm just going to ask you one question. Can I kick it? Yes, we can. I said, can I kick it?
Yes. There's a lot going on in our country, both with the NBA, outside of the NBA, where the two intertwine. I was in Washington, D.C. when everything went down, and we elected a new president. We will get to that in the show. I promise you that will be part of it. Or if you're worried about listening to that, that's going to be at the end of the show. So stay with us till then. But I do want to get BJ, welcome. I want to get to some stuff that's going on in the league right now, starting with Greg Oden, the number one pick by the Portland Trail Blazers. Obviously is out of the league, had to retire because of injuries. He did something with ESPN the last week and said that he believes he will go down as the NBA's biggest bust. Now, before I ask you if you agree with that, why do you think he would come out and talk about himself? What does it say to you when a player comes out and describes himself in that manner?
Well, no, Greg has had a very interesting career, to say the least. You know, as an agent, as an executive, I had an opportunity to see Greg when he was like in 9th and 10th grade. He had a profound impact on the game. What he brought, he was at big, he was athletic. Defensively, he could control the game. He had great hands, great feet, all the things you look for with a big man, he had it. Now, injuries clearly played a part of, I think, probably why he feels this way. And every player faces that same
dilemma.
You face that dilemma, that demon, that fear of what happens if I get hurt. I don't think he was the biggest bust. I just think his expectations of what he could achieve, what he could do, because he had enormous potential. And if he was able to be healthy, if he was able to sustain his health, I think his impact would have been profound. I think he was as good as any big that I've seen over the last 15 years. He was that good, okay? And, you know, he won. I mean, he affected the bottom line. There aren't many players that can say they can have a profound effect on the bottom line in basketball or any sport. There was a reason he was drafted number one ahead of Kevin Durant.
Right. And no matter who had had the number one pick, including the Oklahoma City Thunder,
they were going to take Greg Oden. Let's make this clear.
Yeah.
He was the real deal. Now,
was there any indication at the time when you were, I assume, scouting him when it came to when you were an executive with Chicago Bulls, that he was injury prone or that he might have these issues?
Because I'm not a politician, I have to tell the truth. And I probably shouldn't say this as an agent, but because it's true and my invested interest is always with the kids, big people have to take better care of themselves when they're younger because they're moving so much mass. I first learned this when I got to the NBA that Bill Cartwright is 7 feet, 280, 300 pounds. I was 6'2", 6'3", maybe 175 pounds soaking wet. I remember talking to Ralph Sampson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, to Bill Walton, and they all shared the same thing. bigs need more time to develop their bodies. Just like Shaq. I think Shaq stayed in school, what, 2 or 3 years? Mm-hmm. You have to stay in school because that is a lot of mass. So I'm going to take this mass from high school playing in a high school gym, and 12 months later, I'm going to put him into an 82 game and put that type of duress and stress on his body, let alone mentally, psychologically, and all those other things.
Yeah.
These big kids, where they're jumping and moving, and Greg Oden was as good as any athlete at that size. That's too much stress on the body. When you see what Robert Parrish and these guys were doing, they were all into doing yoga and stretching.
Wilt Chamberlain.
Martial arts. You have to because they're too big. And Rick, when you watch bigs play with their hands in the air, which exposes them to injuries. Mm-hmm. And if their core and back and glutes aren't tight, that duress has to go somewhere. Oh, it goes right to the knees, or it goes to the feet, or it goes to the ankles. So if I had to say any big, stay in school, son. Stay in school to take care of yourself and invest in yourself, because Tim Duncan stayed in school for 4 years. He was okay.
Right.
You can get 20 years out of this if you take care of yourself, but you got to give yourself and your body time to mature, because they're playing a different game than us little guards. They're playing with their hands in the air.
Yep.
And that just exposes them if they aren't strong enough to handle all of that stress and things that's going on as a big man in this league.
Moving on. Russell Westbrook having an amazing season so far. We expected that. I don't know if we expected that it would produce as many wins as it has for the Oklahoma City Thunder. I actually did. I thought the idea of their demise with Kevin leaving was way overblown, simply because I saw what Russell Westbrook did when KD was out hurt. And that was with a team that he hadn't spent as much time with. So Russ is clearly embracing this. Is he the odds-on favorite to be the 2017 NBA MVP if this continues? And if not, why not? Like, where's his competition coming from?
Russell Westbrook is going to have the numbers that's going to support him as an MVP candidate this year. Make no doubt about it. Rick, you know myself, I'm a lifer of this game. I've been in this game for a long time. My focus is always on winning. So when you talk about MVP candidates, it's always talk about your impact on winning. Mm-hmm. Russell's numbers will support an MVP this year. But as a participant of that league and watching it, it embodies much more than just winning. Numbers alone is enough for me to be an MVP. My knowledge of the game of being to implement and play and be a complete player to where you have an opportunity to win the final game of the season, to me, is way more important than putting up 30 points per game.
I got that. But that's not how the MVP is selected.
And if that is how they want to do it, that's how they want to do it. You ask BJ Armstrong, this is what BJ is saying. BJ is saying this: Russell Westbrook will have MVP numbers this year. But I feel he's going to have to, if he's going to be in my criteria.
Right.
You got to be playing for an opportunity to win.
So this is a regular season award. If we're just getting to the end of the regular season and you look at, I'm just going to throw some teams out there before we let this go. San Antonio and Kawhi Leonard, James Harden and the Houston Rockets. How do you weigh where they finish in terms of wins and losses versus what they actually produced or their part in the team? Because this is where it gets difficult for me. You may have guys that are valuable or indispensable to their league, to their team, or that they lift a team up beyond what it's capable of, but it may not end up, like if Kawhi's playing with more talent and they end up with more wins, how many more wins does he have for it to equal what Russell Westbrook is doing with the Oklahoma City Thunder or James Harden is doing with the Houston Rockets? How do you balance that?
Again, I'm going to balance it by very simply putting, when I look at those teams, when I look at a Russell Westbrook team, the Oklahoma City Thunder, if Russell Westbrook is able to get that team in the upper echelon of the Western Conference, if he exceeds my I don't expect them or anticipate them to be 1-4, but if they are 1-4, Russell Westbrook now is clearly in the picture.
Yeah. Well, but what if Houston is there?
Houston is there. I don't know. James Harden is in the picture. Okay.
Okay.
Right. Now, if James Harden makes the eighth seed.
What if they're both there?
Hey, they're both in the picture. What Russell Westbrook has done in Oklahoma City Thunder right now has exceeded. You don't take 30 points out of your lineup. You just don't take Kevin Durant out of the lineup and all of a sudden make the playoffs. I mean, if you just take LeBron off the Cavaliers, you're not going to convince me that they're going to win actually more regular season games. So right. Gotcha. Russell Westbrook has done an incredible job of rallying his troops. He's taken his show on the road. That's been the most impressive thing with me. They compete and they've won some games on the road. So I'm giving this kid all the credit. They've done some amazing things thus far. That to me says that this kid is doing, he's providing leadership. He's a teammate with people respect. And they know he's doing what he's got to do to win the game. I respect that. So if he continues to do this, hey, you know, let the game speak for itself. And right now, what he's able to do, and if they are able to be in the top part of the, you know, getting to the playoffs, the top, you know, two, three, four, you know, teams.
Home court advantage in the top seed in the Western Conference.
I give him all the credit.
Yeah. All right. Second quarter. This is I've been waiting for this. Because we've had, obviously, for those who may not have been fully paying attention, Carmelo Anthony was ejected from a game, got into it with referee Tony Brothers. And Lala, his significant other, pointed out on social media, on Twitter, that this is not the first time that Tony Brothers has always had it in for Carmelo Anthony. Now, this is also not the first time that I've heard of there being a particular vendetta. That might be a little too strong, but some personal feelings going on between a particular player and a particular official. This happens all the time. I mean, Mark Cuban brought it up with it was one of the Staffords, I believe.
Right.
And I'll look up the name in a second. But the feeling among teams, among coaches, among owners, among players, this guy has it out for me and he's always had it out for me. Did you have any of that experience? Did you, BJ, when you were playing, did you have referees that you thought this guy always gives me a beneficial whistle and this guy, for whatever reason, does not like me and is always tough on me?
Of course you're going to have personality conflicts. That's human nature. My dad was a referee, so I'm very sensitive to referees because my dad took every game so personal. He wanted to be perfect in every game. And when he missed a call, I saw how bad he felt. I saw how he really wanted to be the best. He wanted to have every opportunity. Now, in saying that, I see how it's very easy to say, oh, this guy has it out for me. You know, Rick, I'm no one's victim. Okay. There was a referee who we became great friends. Jory Crawford of the NBA. His personality was just a very volatile personality. I could have easily said, oh, he has it out for me. But Rick, again, my personality and knowing and watching my dad and watch how he would come home and talk it over with my mom, how could he miss that call if he wasn't in the right place? I'm not going to allow that to have an effect on what I do out there as an NBA player. I'm a professional. My job is to figure out how to perform under any situation and whatever that may be. So did I see personality conflicts? I see that every day. But as a, you know, that's the world we live in. Every day I'm in some battle. Rick, every day I'm in a battle at my job. I'm a battle in my house. I'm in a battle with my kids. I'm in a battle.
I'm in a battle on this podcast.
I'm in a battle in recruiting players. I'm in a battle. So if you don't understand how to navigate in the battle, then you got to make a choice. And my choice was always, okay, let me figure out a way to do this. And Joy Crawford and I that's like one of my best friends. I love the guy because I gave myself a chance. And to his credit, he gave himself a chance because, man, he would tee you up in a heartbeat. Joy was a hothead. I mean, Joy said he didn't like how you looked at you and he was going to tee you up. So this has been going on. But my thing is, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to just sit and complain about it? Or I'm the poor victim. Look at me. Someone's picking on me. No, you got to figure it out. This is life. This is the real world. So let's do it.
I've told my kids, I go, there's always going to be that person. Like they'll talk about somebody. It's a teacher. It's a teammate. It's whatever. I go, there's always going to be at least one of those people in your life. They're there.
I wish it was just one.
Yeah, what I know, but yeah, fair. But the idea that like if only they would go away, then all would be right. It's like no. They'll be replaced by another one. There's always going to be. You're always going to have that. By the way, I said Stafford. Derek Stafford had issues with Pat Riley. Dan Crawford had issues with Mark Cuban. They did. They looked at the wins and losses, and we always lose when Dan Crawford does one of our games and tried to. You know, that again, that's a situation where you can make the numbers say anything that you want. I worked as a D-League ref for a first-person story. And so I got to know Joe. And I also shadowed Joey and his crew back when we didn't have quite as much transparency. This is when Ed Rush was the head of the officials. I know, as you knew from your father, like people want to assume that they have an agenda. And this is why it always bothers me that the media cracks on referees, because we're both in the same boat. Like people in the media, most reporters, they don't come in with a specific agenda. That might surprise you. The vast majority, they're just trying to do their job. They want to get paid. They want to satisfy their bosses. And if their bosses tell them to do a certain thing, we judge them and say, oh, that's a personal thing. No. I guarantee you, like when it came to Derek Stafford and Pat Riley, or came to Dan Crawford and the Dallas Mavericks, if there was any scrutiny or close look that they took on those teams or on those particular players, whatever, it's because the front office said, we need to cut this out. If Rasheed Wallace got extra tees, it wasn't because those particular referees were pissed off at him. It was the NBA front office saying, and maybe they didn't use the name. They'd simply say, hey, look, we got to keep control of the game. We can't let anybody mess up the game. You know what that means. I can't let Rasheed Wallace act out. So as soon as how you approach it, you can approach it two different ways. You can try to talk to Sheed and see if like, don't make me tee you. Like, look, this is the situation. Or you can just say, front office isn't going to like me talking to them. They don't like those optics. I'm just going to tee them up. And then, hey, my boss is happy. I did what I had to do. I might have messed up the game, but I did what I had to do. Everybody comes at it from a different perspective. But I'm just saying, this, like, it's a personal thing. Like, somebody's taking it into their own hands. That generally doesn't happen, because if you just think about your work and how you do things, your ability to take things into your own hands is not very good.
What are you doing? It's just a halftime.
Yes, this is my favorite part of the game.
All right. I don't know what the halftime show is going to be. I know last week's was Dynamite.
Oh, wow. Oh,
wow. I may dite myself on that. All right. Enjoy the show.
All right, guys. This is like almost fitting because of the situation that we're dealing with in America right now. But this is Denmark Vesey and his song, Don't Smoke K2. Listen to the lyrics. Pay attention.
So don't smoke K2. Law made weed, the government ain't cool. Hell no.
Hell no.
Hell no. They got top cell phones from a tailbone. They got metal world order throwing elbow. And a bunch of blood on their hands, well known. And the only one who feel it is the bottom. The lower class trying to creep up with the Quail bombs. That's a class in the middle like Malcolm. Not X, not Little, not Jamal Warren. It ain't Dio, it's Nat Geo. When the cheetah fangs ripping the gazelle throat. So what you on, Hobbs or Dope or Alpo? Yo, just don't smoke K2. That synthetic dope, I mean. You got cats smoking bath salt and potpourri just bashing. And 28 days later, you be butt ass naked trying to eat somebody's face up. That's cool, straight from the headline. I mean, we all know a real good brother who sold mad weed, got pinched by a dirty undercover. Now that brother doing fed time, hustling to keep a seat up by the bread line. Oh. O squared, H O squared. The I on a dollar don't shed no tears. And I say, hell no.
Hell no.
Hell no. I got more than enough reason to feel uneasy. You see me, I could have flew planes in Tuskegee. Therefore, when I see Pfizer ads and mags, and the drug side effects sound the same as the diseases, it's sleep, so don't smoke K2. God made weed, the government ain't cool.
All right, it's the third quarter. Time to test our trivia knowledge. We were both losers last week. I don't know how that happens.
I ran out of questions, but we were both. I'm not a loser. I just ran out of questions.
At one point, one of us is going to tweet out, I don't know more about the game than my co-host. I have a feeling this week it's going to be BJ who's going to have to finally put out that tweet. Or maybe not. But BJ, here's the question. Let's start here. Which individual was fined the most for a single incident in the NBA? Damon Stoudemire for weed possession. Fined, I guess I'm not going to give you the numbers. Mark Cuban for criticizing NBA refs. Latrell Sprewell for the failure to report a broken hand. Or Dennis Rodman for kicking a courtside cameraman. Which among those four paid the stiffest fine to the NBA? I wish I had this one because I knew this one. I know this one.
I'm just going to say Spree because he did so many things. I'm just going to say
Spree. You are incorrect. It was Mark Cuban. He was fined $500,000. Spree actually was fined $250,000, as was Damon Stoudemire for weed possession. Dennis Rodman for kicking a courtside cameraman. Only $25,000, although his 11-game suspension cost him a total of $1 million in salary. And Spree, when he got into it with PJ Carlissimo, was suspended for a long stretch of games, but that wasn't a fine. That was money lost as a result of the suspension.
I want to say Mark Cuban technically is not a player.
I will have to go back and listen to the tape as to how I presented that. But anyway, but you knew it was Mark Cuban. It wasn't a trick. See, this is what I don't know about you.
Okay, like, let's go.
You think every question's a trick question.
Well, last week we were doing WNBA.
That's not tricky. That's just underhanded by Shane, our producer.
And I'm a little sensitive. You know, you guys have to start saying Rebecca logo.
Yeah, you know what?
You guys ganged up on me last
week. You said it. First time, let's go.
I thought we were going to talk about, like, you know, the Australian League or something. That's next week. All right. Which NBA player has the most fines since the 2012 and 2013 season? A, Dwight Howard. B, Matt Barnes. C, Paul George. D, J.R. Smith.
So now it's the most fines or the biggest amount, the biggest total amount?
Which NBA player has the most fines since the 2012 and 2013 season?
I have to go Matt Barnes. Have to.
Ding, 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 ding. That's awesome. He has accumulated 6 fines since 2012 and 13, totaling $185,000.
And that's not even counting the mix-up with Derek Fisher back at the Casa. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Donald Sterling holds the NBA record for the largest fine by a team owner. How much was that fine?
Oh,
$25 million for moving the Clippers from San Diego to L.A., $22 million, $18 million, or $17
million. All right, you guys are ganging up on me now.
It's a conspiracy, man.
Okay, I mean, come on. I mean, Rick, come
what?
On. All right.
What?
What is the question again? Come on. What's the question?
Donald Sterling. You know, Donald Sterling holds the NBA record for the largest fine by a team owner. How much was that fine? And there are four. I'll just give you four numbers. $25 million, $22 million, $18 million, or $17 million. Which of those did he pay? He paid the largest fine ever by an owner. Which of those numbers is it?
$25 million.
Ding, 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 ding. See, we're not. What are you talking about? We're ganging up on you. That was easy. And
like, I'm trying to look at the game, and you guys are asking me questions that have nothing to do with the game. I got to go to the game
now
and look at
owners.
I gotta,
you're now an agent. okay? Agents have to deal with numbers and contracts and you have to have a calculator, and we're throwing numbers at you. This should be in your wheelhouse, BJ.
I got one number. I got two numbers I need to look at. I got two numbers. The scoreboard, and hey, how many points did that man put in? Because if he put in 25 points, we can do something. All right, let's move on. One of these guys is not, I repeat, is not among the top seven most fine players in NBA history.
Okay.
A, Meta World Peace. B, Kenyon Martin. C, Dennis Rodman. D, Steven Jackson.
Okay. Well, I am going to say, give me the first two again. Meta and who?
Meta World Peace and Kenyon Martin. Can I just say Ron Artest?
Yes, you can. I am going to say that the Panda's friend, Meta World Peace, has, now I'm assuming we're going by fines. We're not going by suspensions, because obviously we had the Malice in the Palace and he missed a lot of time because of that. We're just talking about fines. See, I don't think Meta is like those other guys. My second choice would be Kenyon, but I'm going to go Meta World. I'm going to go Ron Artest. Damn it.
C, Dennis Rodman.
Is that right? The Worm.
The worm was an illusion. Everyone thought he was a bad boy. The Worm was an illusion.
Okay, but you know what? We didn't count. Team fine. I guarantee you, Dennis racked up some team fines with San Antonio alone. He's taking his shoes off. Taking his shoes off while the game's still on. Going on. All right, so we need a tie. Shane, we need a tiebreaker.
All right, so.
We're 1-1, right?
Yeah, you both 1-1.
Yep.
So the tiebreaker for this one is true or false.
Really, first one to answer?
Yeah.
Oh,
first one to answer.
And don't, don't do any of that Jedi mind trick again, okay?
All right, true or false? Mickey Arison was fined $1 million for unauthorized comments during the 2011
true.
NBA
true.
Lockout.
True, 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 true.
All right.
It looks like Rick's
gonna be tweeting.
What? What?
Because Mickey Arison was not fined $1 million; he was fined $500K.
Damn it!
And that was for engaging Twitter trolls.
All right. So hold on a second. If we want to talk about trick questions,
he's flipping. Bukers flipping right now.
All right. I'll tell you what. I'll tweet that out, but I'm also gonna tweet out why I have to tweet it out.
Right.
And we'll let the people judge. Moving on to the fourth quarter.
Well, I'm very pessimistic.
Saddam Hussein, whether they like him or didn't like him, he hated terrorists. He'd shoot and kill terrorists.
You've just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
We're not apolitical here. We're allowed to be political. There's some other things that I do where I have to walk a straighter line. I don't have to here. And so I was in Washington, D.C. I flew into Washington, D.C. the night of the election. And
you were there. You, Rick Bucher and Donald Trump were in the same city.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was bizarre. I felt like in flying in there and first of all, just being a captive audience on a plane, watching the returns come in, thinking, what the hell is going on? What is going on? And then just seeing it unfold before my eyes and then land there and you could tell everybody was out of sorts. Everybody was, this can't be reality. And so that's why my producer and my co-host, being men of color, I honestly, as it was unfolding, I wanted to go up to everyone who wasn't a white male and give them a hug and say, I'm sorry. That's what I wanted to do, because I was like, this can't be, like, how can this be happening in this country? So that's why I'm a little surprised, and I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on political discourse on this show, but that's why I'm a little surprised that you are in such a good mood. I would be more surprised.
I have a massive distraction right
okay.
now. Hawkeye Nation.
Oh, my.
Hawkeye Nation, the Big Ten. We take them down. I mean, I can't think of, I mean, but that whole election, as I was watching it, my inner voice was just screaming. Mm. The whole, I couldn't believe it. I mean, literally, I was watching and we were watching and we just couldn't watch it. It was like, no, it can't be. It was like 8 o'clock and you're like, okay, he's going to win, you know, this state. He's going to, Hillary's going to come back. My inner voice was screaming so loud that I just literally had to go to sleep. And when I woke up the next morning, I woke up and I said, honey, I had this weird dream. She's like, what's that? I was like, I think Donald Trump won. She was like, no, that wasn't a dream.
Yeah.
It wasn't a dream. It's real. So it's here. And now let's deal. We got to deal.
So I tried to go to sleep and I couldn't go to sleep. Like, I couldn't go to sleep. I kept lying there just thinking about, like, okay, so what does this mean? What does this mean in the immediate? What does it mean in the future? What does it mean about how I viewed our country and the people in it? And where did I go wrong? And maybe, you know, living in California, we obviously were very pro, as do you. Maybe we were in a bubble. I mean, that's my wife asked me the same thing. And I said, yeah, well, that's different. I mean, Shane, you probably were you aware? Did you see it coming?
I saw it coming mostly because I had never seen so many Confederate flags waving off the back of bicycles in my life.
Man.
Oh, man.
You know, I mean, there's people riding down the street behind my house because I live right off a really busy street. And I'm looking out the back of my subdivision, out the back of my house.
Ooh.
And I'm seeing people literally every day riding bicycles by with massive Confederate flags waving off the back of them. And I'm going, damn, am I in Atlanta or am I in the North Georgia Hills, you know? But what shocked me was that Hillary actually won the county that I'm in, which is usually considered the whitest county in the Atlanta area. But just my particular area in Northwest Atlanta is heavily Republican, man. And it was really, really bad, man. I mean, I saw a lot of stuff. I mean, there's a guy that put a sign up like literally a block from my house. He has a store. It's a store, a Civil War store. He put outside the store White History Year.
Oh, I said that I would have been more surprised by you guys talking about it in those terms. But I was around the Washington Wizards and talked to a number of the players and staff. And the one thing that I got is that a lot of people, particularly black athletes, coaches, administrators, there was also this feeling like, well, it's not like we didn't know. It's not like we didn't know that this existed. Like, it's not like we haven't had to kind of deal with this bubbling under the surface all the time. It just happened to expose itself to the entire world. And that's why...
Well, a little light was brought to it. I think it was always there. And with social media, the thing that's amazing to me now about elections is how people communicate. Social media brought that audience out that normally didn't have access to information in the depth that they had. Mm. And the thing that I thought was amazing is, as you travel around the country, Rick, like we do, and around the world, when you go to places, I grew up in Michigan. So when you go to places in Michigan, you know, you're isolated.
Yeah.
You know, okay, you think of Michigan, you think of Detroit, you know, there's a large African-American community in that little area. You move outside of Detroit, you're not seeing anything. And I vividly remember when I went to school in Iowa, where I went to college at the University of Iowa. Mm-hmm. And I had, you know, a farm was something that I just read about, you know. Hmm. On the farm, mm-hmm. you know, you have horses, you have pigs, you have cows. I met people who actually grew up on a farm.
Right, right.
And I met people for the first time in my life, white people who had never met a black person before.
Yeah.
Now, and that was eye-opening to
me. Look at the map. Look at how the voting went down. The red is right down in the middle of the map. The blue is on the two coasts. And my belief is people on the coast, when you live on a coast, you are exposed to other cultures because that's the gateway for other countries coming in. So you
Absolutely.
Interact with people of color, of other cultures, and you're more conscious of like how we are, how globally interconnected we are, and how people from other cultures see us, and how we need to be all open to each other. That's the only way that this really works. If you're in the middle of the country, and I know I'm painting with somewhat of a broad brush here, but I believe it to be, for the most part, true, you don't have any of that exposure. So if somebody tells you all those people are a boogeyman, and I remember this, I've had this experience going over to China, we've had it with Russia, anybody who's been around for a while, there was always the, you never met a Russian or you'd never met somebody from China. And so the impression given was, oh, they're evil. And the Chinese kind of had the same thing. Like the Western world, like we don't want your world. You're going to pollute our world. You're going to corrupt us. We don't want it. And so it becomes all propaganda. And ultimately, that is where, in my mind, President-elect Trump won the day because his propaganda was ringing all the right bells and he made it a very simplistic message that people who, you can say educated, uneducated, they're at the very least naive. They're not worldly. They bought in 100%.
You know, this whole election, as I was watching, it reminded me of one thing. And I'm paraphrasing. I remember reading in high school the autobiography of Malcolm X. And I remember, I'm paraphrasing here, the media is the most powerful entity on the earth. Marketing and the things that we have access to, if you repeat it often enough, if you repeat something over and over again, it'll have an effect on you. The media is the most powerful entity on earth. They have the power to make the innocent guilty, to make the guilty innocent. Mm-hmm. And that's power. Yeah. That's massive power.
This is the
You realize that they control the minds of the masses with the media. I mean, the media's influence and social media and all those things, that's powerful when you can put things out, when the things that were said during this election.
Right.
The things that were said and done and the influence that it had on people, kids, middle America, the coast, all around the world, that is, to me, the most amazing thing ever, is that the media just reported it and they backed off and said, hey, reporting the news.
See,
we're just reporting it. We're not making it. We're just reporting it.
Yeah, well, and that's my question is, so Donald Trump's in the Oval Office. He's in the White House. And you're on a championship team. You and the Chicago Bulls have won a championship with Donald Trump as the president. And you are invited to come to the White House. Do you go?
You know, Rick, I always refer back to my initial instinct is to say no. But when I think it through, my forefathers did a lot of things they didn't want to do, but they had to do them. I have to respect the people before me, what they had to do to get me to this position where I actually have a choice. BJ is going to be fine whether he goes or not, but I have a responsibility to that kid to do the right thing. I took my job as an athlete that serious where I had a responsibility to do the right thing, to set the example for the next person because someone set that example for me. And I feel that strongly about my culture, my heritage, my history of where I'm from, of doing the right thing for our culture to move forward. For us to move forward, we got to face our fears. We got to face our demons. I'm not running from nothing, Rick. That's just me. So am I going to show up? Yeah, I'm showing up. I'm showing up to the party because I'm not running from something that, okay, you might have done something wrong or you might have done something and from my viewpoint, but the only way that I can get this problem solved is I got to communicate, which leads to cooperate, which leads to a discussion to get something done. I'm not going to just say, you're wrong, and run away from it. I'm getting to the solution of the problem. So if me looking at President Trump face to face, and we can have an open discussion about what's going on and address and hear him out.
Yeah. See, the tricky part is, and we know this, and this is why, you know, for those who are looking at Hillary and looking at career politicians, clearly, if you voted for Donald Trump, you're not bothered by racism. You may not be a racist, but racism is not a thing that is at the top of your list of this must go. Like, it's, you know what? I don't like it. I don't want to be racist. But if somebody else is racist, I'll look the other way because there are other things that I'm trying to get out of this equation.
Yep.
And that's my issue. It's like, no. You can't, I'm not racist, but I'm okay with racism. Anybody who voted the 59 million, you can't tell me that's not the case. You don't vote for just part of him. See, I didn't vote for the racist part of Donald Trump. I voted for the part that said he's going to bring back jobs in the country. No, you get the whole package. Preach. You don't get to. This ain't a la carte.
Take us to church. Take us to church.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take you to the end of the show. This has been the fourth quarter. If you're listening from iTunes, we don't get political every time, but obviously what happened over the last week needed to be addressed, and I'm not going to promise that we're not going to touch upon this again because I know the comics out there, the comedians, well, man, they are excited that Donald Trump is in the office because he is, I guarantee he's going to provide material. But if you want to listen to more of this show, subscribe to the show on iTunes. Please rate and leave a review. It's important to us because we want to know what you think of the show and how we can get it better. Ultimately, we are doing this for you. We think we have a lot to share with you, but we want to do it in the right way. You could also like and listen to the show on soundcloud.com/BJ and Bucher. And obviously, you can follow the show's dedicated Twitter page @BJ and Bucher. So, hope you like the show. Tune in next week.